You're listening to The Review, first broadcast on the 2nd of June, 2012, right here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Review, coming to you from Bangkok here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, and Gwen Robinson. Coming up on today's program, we'll be visiting bookshops in Amman, Seattle, and one right here in the Thai capital.
English book is more popular than Thai language, but the Japanese book is more popular than English, you know. Japanese come first, English come second, and Thai.
And we'll also be talking to DJ Maf Sai to find out what songs have been hitting his radar recently. And we'll be joined in the studio by Jay Spencer for this week's magazine review, and of course we'll be talking a little bit about Thai fashion right here on The Review on Monocle 24. And hello and a very warm welcome to the special episode of The Review coming to you from Bangkok with Tyler Brulé and Gwen Robinson. Nice to see you again on a Saturday here.
Nice to see you again, Tyler, after that rain-soaked Friday night.
Rain-soaked Friday night, but actually really good guests. And you know, one thing, we were chatting to Subhakorn Vejjajiva, who is the CEO of the Bangkok Post. And when we were chatting to him yesterday on Midori House, I felt we sort of ran out of time just chatting about the media scene here, because I know in a moment we're going to be in our booksellers, we're going to Kinokuniya, and I was at, and of course this is a big Japanese chain which has quite a presence. I mean, they've got a mega store, for example, in Singapore. They've got a massive store in Dubai as well. They're quite a player in the region. But I went in there, I actually felt a little bit jealous last week, because there was a better selection of media. There was a better selection of magazines than I would actually find in most stores in London. So, and you were sort of touching on it before. Do you ever feel sort of media starved here, or are you kind of quite well fed?
Well, no, I feel envious actually that I don't read Thai, and I am trying, but I think it would be a very long time before I can read Thai fluently. But the thing is, the media here is so vibrant, and as Subhakorn was saying, there's virtually a new magazine launched every month. In fact, I think actually it's probably some months like three new magazines. Bangkok Post alone seems to have launched. He talked about a free tabloid they've launched.
And yeah, plus all of the supplements they do on top of it.
But, you know, the thing is, and all the hot fashion magazines and trend magazines and lifestyle, whatever, but they're all in Thai. There obviously are some English language publications, but the so-called farang market, meaning foreigners, is quite small here. So, you know, all these covers look so tantalizing.
Yeah.
And you know, Thais love new, shiny things. So, you know, there's often a lot of inventive approaches, creativity, but I can't read what they're saying.
Tell me, when you, from a point of inspiration point of view, I mean, and you know, as we were saying before, I see a lot of Japan, definitely influencing media. Whether it's sort of Taiwan or Hong Kong or or Greater China, does that have much influence? Does India sort of also play a role in also flavoring the media scene here, do you think?
My sense is very little. I think the ASEAN thing is getting bigger now, and it's really taking off. It's sinking into people that they're all working up to this great integration in 2015, at least, of certain sort of aspects of their economies, and that's got a cultural knock-on effect. And I think you're seeing a lot more interplay in music as well as media. I think, you know, they look to places also like Singapore, and you see a lot more Indonesian influences coming in. So, you know, I think it's going to be a very exciting region over the next decade, and you're seeing signs of that now, and that is spilling over in media. The thing is the languages, I think. Like, you know, these are countries, well, I guess it's a little like Europe, although, you know, Europe is sort of more integrated like that. A lot of Europeans seem to be very fluent and understand each other's languages, whereas I think you won't get Indonesians buying Thai magazines, for example. So there is that.
Just before we go, and we're going to do our whiz around the world and looking at various booksellers, I just wanted to ask you, who is, will Bangkok continue to be the default center for, you know, international media? You're based here for the Financial Times, and of course we've been having people sort of drop in and out. I guess there are, you know, there are press freedom issues which make it difficult for Singapore. Maybe Jakarta, I guess, only becomes the Indonesia story if you're based there. So, do you think, you know, when you talk about sort of a greater ASEAN, or do you think that it's all up for grabs in a way, or you know, does Bangkok continue to be the place where foreign journos are going to be based in this area?
Yeah, it's odd actually, because we've got to remember, I mean, you've still got a few, you know, fairly communist authoritarian regimes in this region, such as Vietnam, Laos, not to mention, you know, as you said, these sort of guided democracies that take more than an ordinary interest in, you know, keeping control of the press or regulating it more heavily. Thailand does have that freewheeling atmosphere, although we have to say that, as, you know, foreign journalists operating here, one of the big stories is this whole sensitivity and issue about laissez-majesté. So you've had people being convicted, webmasters, you know, online, even for posting, you know, for posts online. So, you know, there is a huge sensitivity.
And this is, you're talking about just the issue regarding the royal family.
Yes, exactly. But apart from that, I'm amazed how, you know, freewheeling the Thais are about it. So, yes, foreign correspondents feel they can drop in and out quite easily here. And you can pretty well, you know, write anything but let, you know, steer clear of any sort of the sensitivities that to do with the monarchy, and you're fine. That's the message.
Well, we'll try to do that for the next, 50 minutes or so here. Yes. On the review on Monocle 24. We're back in a moment. Well, it's a Saturday and you're back with a review here in Bangkok on Monocle 24, and it's time to visit some independent booksellers around the world. We thought we would kick things off by heading off to Amman, Jordan, where Monocle contributor Joseph Dana met up with Marianne Al-Jazeera, the owner of Book at Cafe, or Book Ampersand Cafe even. Here's what he had to say.
My name is Madian Al-Jazeera, and this bookshop is called, it's actually Books at Cafe. And it's the at sign, because this is the first internet cafe in the Middle East. And supposedly the sixth worldwide, so this is what kind of gave the hype. It was books, it was internet, so we were the first people in town doing this. The difference that we made was because we realized also that the average income per capita, per person here, was quite low. And to get everybody to start reading, we started to recycle books. We would buy used books, stock books, remainder books, and new books. So if you wanted a particular title, you could pay the full price and get it new, or you can pay slightly less because it's stock, or even less if it's remainder, or even less if it's used once, or even less if it's used three times. So everybody could afford it. And that was the way we came through. And I think that was our success. We maintained that, and we made it available to everybody in English books. So we were the first people to do it, I think, in the area. I don't know if I can say this, mummy porn. Everybody is buying that book. Everybody is chasing after that book. It's a trilogy, and it's selling like hotcakes. This is on the English side. We also sell Arabic books. One of the Arabic books that we are selling is called The Bride of Amman. That's selling like hotcakes as well, because it's the first Arabic book that was written by a young author here in Amman that actually tackles all the hidden issues, sexuality, sex before marriage, you know, love, inter-religion love, religious love, all the little issues we have here that people don't talk much about. So this has been a big hit as well for us. These are the two hot items now. We try to bring in the mainstream, you know, what's popular, the hot sellers, the best sellers in New York on the New York lists, the hot sellers in the UK lists. We have those usually. But we've noticed that we have a very eclectic and alternative clientele that come to the cafe, who ultimately have to go through the bookshop to go up to the cafe. And we've realized that the more alternative books that we have, the more we sell. You know, we have a large Middle East section in Middle East politics, but usually it's the alternative thinking books on Middle East that sell. We've noticed that. I don't think people, it was really interesting to see that people here do not want to read what they see in the paper, what they read in the papers and what they read in it. They really want, I think it's because the Middle East is full of conspiracy theories and we've all like grown up with it. So nobody wants to hear it as it really is. They really want to see different angles. So politics is hot. Religion is hot. It, funny enough, we thought fiction would fly, you know, Dan Brown fly, you know, people like Dan Brown, you know, they sell. But we went out when we first opened, we have a big room with all fiction books, you know, thrillers and mystery and all. And to our surprise, people don't want that. They want hardcore stuff. They want real stuff.
That was Madianne Al-Jazeera from Book at Cafe, or Ampersand Cafe. How do you feel about ampersands being used in everything, Gwen? I feel it was a bit of overkill.
Yes, I totally agree. So I don't know. Book anyway, at Cafe,
maybe.
I suppose,
yeah. Anyway, he was chatting to our Joseph Dana in Amman. Next, we're going to head over to Seattle, Washington, where we meet up with Peter Aaron of the Elliott Bay Book Company.
5642. My name is Peter Aaron. I'm the owner of the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle. Seattle is a real reading town. Seattle has always been the number one per capita book sales city in the United States. So I think because of the combination of our weather, which keeps people indoors a lot, and also the fact that we've always had a very highly educated population, people in Seattle digest a lot of books. And it cuts across all ages and income levels, and it's just book lovers of every ilk.
I'm from out of town, so thank you.
I'll give you a couple of the current bestsellers at Elliott Bay, and ours are generally pretty different from what you'll see on a national bestseller list. For example, one book is The Swerve by Stephen Greenblatt. It's a history book, and it tells the story of a 16th century Italian monk whose passion in life was discovering lost manuscripts of the classic era from Greece and Rome. It's really surprising to me who buys that book. It's not a page-turning novel, although in a lot of ways it reads like one. I've seen people from, 15 to 85, someone who is interested in undertaking a serious read, either because they're interested in the philosophy and or historical aspect of it, or just because it's a fascinating story. The store was started in 1973. 2 years ago, we moved Elliott Bay from Pioneer Square to its current location in Capitol Hill. We are right in the middle of a hub of dense and very varied population in terms of income, age, race, any way you want to look at it. It's an area that has been revitalizing very rapidly, which is exactly the opposite dynamic that we were experiencing in our original location in Pioneer Square, which is why we moved. The original store was in a beautiful historic building, and it just had a lot of grace and elegance. Brick walls, cedar bookshelves, creaky old wooden floor. So in looking for a new location for it, it was very important to me to find a building that had its own character. We could not be in anything new. People just would not have accepted that as being Elliott Bay. So I was very happy and lucky to find the building that we're in now, which was built in 1916. It was originally the service location for Ford trucks. The building has huge timber beams and trusses holding up a ceiling of cedar planks, and also has a lovely floor that creaks a little, not as much as the old one.
That was our contributor, Emily Eagle, speaking to the owner of the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle. Have you spent much time on the West Coast? That'd be the West Coast, of the U.S.
In fits and spurts. I haven't been there for quite a while, actually.
No desire to be the Seattle or San Francisco. We've been doing a lot of San Francisco recently, but no desire to... you did your brief New York gig before you came over here, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right. I went from Japan to New York for about 5 months.
I mean, from an energy point of view, I guess...
Oh, my God, there's no comparison.
There isn't, is there?
No, the energy's over on the east, I'd say.
Yeah.
Although now I'll probably get hate mail from all these irate Californians and Seattle people. But it does strike me as New York's got the buzz. But that's just New York. I don't think there's much else on the East that would sort of hit you between the eyes in terms of energy levels.
Mm. Well, why don't we keep it in the neighborhood in Bangkok? Our producer, Daniel Giacopelli, went over to Kinokuniya Bookstore a little bit earlier. He talked to Nop Gaoyanyang Shati from the English end of the Kinokuniya Bookstore.
Hi, my name is Nop. My last name is Gaoyanyang Shati. I'm working for the Kinokuniya Bookstore as an English book staff. I carry and take care about magazine and a comics book. the bestseller of the literature book is, it's a romance, it's called 50 Shades of Grey. That series is really famous. There are three books of it, 50 Shades of Grey, and a fiction is might be Hunger Game. The Hunger Game is really famous. English book is more popular than Thai language, and but the Japanese book is more popular than English, you know. Japanese come first, English come second, and Thai. We have three languages here. The Japanese is more popular here because almost customer here is Asian, and they are so crazy about Asian star, you know, like K-pop, music, musician, something like that, and games, comics, manga, Monaco. It's very, very popular. I don't know why, because I never open and see it inside, but many my customer always reserve it. If they don't reserve it, they might not get it because it's out of stock really quick. The other one is Solitaire. It's a jewelry magazine. It's popular, and for the fashion, I think the first choice must be Vogue. The Vogue US, Vogue UK, InStyle, Harper Bazaar, and Nylon. The best publisher of travel books might be Lonely Planet. Yes. And the country is most popular is sure is Thai.
And that was our Daniel Giacopelli talking to Gaoyuan Yang Shati from Kinokuniya Bookstore. Gwen, have you found your favorite little hidden shop here, your great bookseller in the city?
Oh, where you want me to tell you?
Well, yeah.
Actually, there is, I have to say, there is a little, as I said, it's pretty limited for foreigners in Bangkok in terms of access to English language material, but there is a wonderful secondhand bookstore down Sukhumvit Road near the fabulous Emporium shopping centre, and that seems to attract all kinds of foreigners of all sort of tastes and ages, and that's probably one of the few hidden kind of gems in the literary scene in Bangkok. Haven't found many other. I love the big bookstores, but that's kind of, you know, in a category of its own.
Yeah, absolutely. You are listening to The Review here on Monocle 24. We're in Bangkok. When we come back in a moment, we're going to be talking to DJ Maft Sai. He's going to have his musical picks from his Thai turntables and maybe a few others. Back in a moment.
The June issue of Monocle is a round-the-world ticket that takes in the best boats and planes and trains in our annual transport survey. We also reach for the skies as we climb to the top of Tokyo's new Skytree Tower, stay ahead as we meet an Ethiopian Olympic icon, and visit Kolkata as the city tries to step up a gear. And there's lots more.
In the culture section, Aisha Spears looks beyond the Steers and Stetsons to profile the gallerists and collectors at this year's Dallas Art Fair. Design Miami founder Craig Robbins talks us through his art, and there's a wonderful column on the art of wandering.
In the design section, we head north to Stockholm for a global exclusive of Ett Hem, a small hotel with big ambitions to shake up the hospitality industry.
There's also our 36-page Thailand National Survey that puts a spotlight on the country's top tech firms, horticultural hothouses, and some cool brewers too. The June issue of Monocle is on newsstands now or available via subscription at monocle.com. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
If you're on the go but still want to stay tuned in to Monocle 24, then download the Monocle mobile phone app. You'll have access to our live stream, past shows, Monocle's daily web column, and our 2525 city guides. And it's available for iPhone, Windows Phone 7, and Nokia N9 devices. So take Monocle 24 with you wherever you are, whether you're beachside or airborne. Head to monocle.com for more details.
A And you're back with a review here in Bangkok on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, and Gwen Robinson. Well, we thought we would have someone who's almost become something of a Thai veteran on the program, DJ Mafsai. You might have heard him a couple of weeks ago when I was co-anchoring with Emma Nelson. It's great to have him in person. The gentleman is here in studio, hopefully with a lineup of things which sound not unlike what you played last time. There was a fantastic response. So Mafsai, welcome. Thank you very much for coming around.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Listen, interesting that even, I think probably since, you know, we chatted to you last, it really did sort of spark my interest in the whole music scene in this country. And I think, you know, people have sort of seen sort of, you know, the rise of course, you know, just what has been seen as sort of Thai pop over the last decade. And I think, you know, the power that that has, and you can see people sort of consuming this music in Taiwan and in Hong Kong and Japan, etc. But tell us a little bit about, I mean, you play in Japan as well, but what's the attraction and sort of what is the sound that you've crafted for yourself in a way?
I think it's just basically the old Thai music from the production within the 50 to early 80s stuff that it was quite interesting in terms of like the experimentation that they have within the music back in the day, also the influences from the GI that bring in different instrument within the towards Thailand, and the mixture of that to the to traditional instrument that they have in the countries, and also the stuff that I DJ when I go to Japan and stuff. It's not only the Thai stuff, but really mixture of stuff that sound kind of rootsy, and it kind of connected with each other, like the stuff from Mali, from Ethiopia, from Pakistan and stuff. And when you kind of listen to it, you kind of, it makes sense in a way that, you know, it's no culture related, but the sounding is quite similar.
Why don't we why don't we start with, what are you going to play for us first today?
For the first track I'm going to play is the track called Bump Lam Pleun, which is from this band called Pet Pintong. The band started in like 1973, and it's basically, it's the mixture of the Molam music, which is the music from the northeastern part of Thailand, from Isan. And on the time, there was kind of introduction to kind of bass line and all the, you know, instrument that people kind of bring into the import instrument that people bring in the country, and just mix with the local instrument.
Great, let's have a listen. That was the first chapter from our Thai music session. I want to ask you, was that something that you're playing just raw and clean, or have you remixed that?
Raw and clean. Just basically kind of selecting the old tracks without doing anything. But sometimes, every now and then, when we do releases and stuff, we do kind of remaster and stuff. Because we kind of feel like, you know, I mean, the production speak for itself is one of those things that we don't really need to put anything towards it.
Right. And Gwen, yesterday we were talking about, you know, whether Thailand, you know, exports itself enough when it comes to, you know, even hospitality, of course, you know, massive tourism industry in this country for sure. But whether it's almost the, maybe the more tangible assets of Thai hospitality, whether they're actually going out into the world enough. And I'm wondering, you know, not just Thai music, but, you know, also, you know, television formats, you know, cinema, etc. Do you think it's still very much a Thai story, and you think, you know, there's room for it to change even?
Yeah, very much. And you obviously feel that way too. When you hear stuff like this, and you see what's coming out of Japan with, some very funky Japanese doing stuff with traditional Japanese instruments and folk songs, and, you know, souping it up, and this has so much potential. And as well, I think there's just some incredibly talented Thai artists and filmmakers, but they haven't gone out in the way that, you know, you're seeing the Japanese or Koreans, for example, when you see.
Why don't we have another? What do you have for us next?
For the next track, it's called Third Bump. It's from this artist called Santon Chai Rung Rung, which is he started doing the mixture of Molam, which is the Isan music from up north of Thailand, and mixture with disco in 1984, when kind of the discotheque start introduced to Thailand, and all the local gig kind of lost in it crowd, and so he kind of mixed up the two, so to get in terms of getting the crowd back for the Molam.
Sounds promising.
Hey,
And that was chapter two of our time. It's interesting that it's a sound that I think many people who are perhaps not that initiated would say you hear throughout Southeast Asia that, you know, this is something that you could also, it reminds you, you know, I've heard very similar things, you know, right. Traveling around Bali as well. I've heard similar things, you know, also when you're in Malaysia. You mentioned sort of the setup to that artist and that particular sound. Did that really sort of take hold, you know, through a good chunk of the 1980s here? Did it become really a defined sound?
He actually got his name for this sound, but it's only for a certain area in Thailand, which is basically it's on Isan area, which is the northeastern part. Mm. But I mean, most of the music from the northeast doesn't really come into Bangkok, because it's kind of different music scene in Bangkok on the town, with more of the cover song in terms of, like, you know, the cover of the US funk and stuff, but right. The Thai vocal.
Interesting. Is it right now, from a, if, you know, you working as a DJ, is there sort of a curiosity and demand just almost for how maybe the Thai ear interprets things and how it sees the world? I'm wondering, you know, when people book you, mm-hmm. You know, what's the hook for them in, just because, you know, you've got this sort of big back catalog, mm-hmm. of work, and you've got such a big collection, or what's the draw?
I think it's the mixture of stuff, and as well as the music that. Because for some of the stuff that I got, it's actually mainly on records, and I mean, some of them is just impossible to find anymore. It's like some track is like one copy and then over. so sometimes with the rareness of the music as well as the selection, I would think, because the stuff that I play is, as I say, it's not only the Thai stuff, but just a mixture of the world music stuff that really give the connection in terms of, like, the groove, the feel on the dance floor as well.
And Gwen, earlier on you were talking about just, you know, maybe this greater sense of ASEAN. Yesterday we were talking to a gentleman, Jeep, about again just exports, you know, within the region, and again, you know, how, you know, the main markets are on this country's doorstep now. And I'm wondering, when you look at you know, the market here, and I wonder about sort of the inward influences, because last week you had Lady Gaga in town.
Yeah.
There was, you know, there was a lot of upset about the fact that, you know, Thais felt offended because she said that she's here to buy a fake Rolex. Okay, well, you know, whether that was just funny or not, whatever. But regardless, many people said as well that it didn't sort of take off in quite the way that, in fact, that the stadium wasn't sold out, they had to give away tickets. And then what's interesting is then I went to fly home, and there was just thousands and thousands of fans at the airport. And I thought, okay, well, are they here to say goodbye to Lady Gaga? And they said, no. They said, in fact, there's a Korean soap star was flying home, and so his flight was going back to Seoul. So that's why there's all these people here. So I guess to both of you, just to, you know, when you look at this market, is there really sort of a look towards, you know, across the Pacific to the U.S. and you know, over to Europe in terms of cultural influences, or do they tend to come close? Are they closer to home? Are they more Korean, more Japanese, you know, more from Taiwan?
I think it's with in Thai music, especially with that it's kind of different. There's a lot of different style within Thai music, and different genre within it. And from last year when we tour, me and my partner, we tour Europe, we can see that each city or each country was interested in a certain sound of Thai music, not all Thai.
Right.
Like in Germany, was more interested in the Thai psychedelic rock in the 60s, more than the traditional stuff.
Right.
And in Japan, was more interested in the local northeastern music than the different
right.
style. So I think it's kind of, at the same time, there's interest in within the Thai music in different place of the world, because also with the compilations and stuff they've been kind of releasing about Thai music. But at the same time, it's I think it just different country was interested in different aspect of the music itself.
But how about the other way around? Mm-hmm. Like, what are Thais, the Thai music makers themselves? I know they're not monolithic, but what are they interested? What's their big influence? I mean, it's like, how's US? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a lot of influence from the U.S., especially back in the day when, as I say, like there's with the GI coming into the country, so they bring in a lot of different style. They introduced the soul funk, even some of the trap was
just make a copy of Santana riff guitar and just kind of mixture of stuff that I think is kind of to the point that, you know, all music in the world is kind of connected in terms of like, and also with the US music, it was so strongly promoted and, you know, well known all over the world in this sort of time as well, after the 50.
Matt, we probably have time for just one more song. What are you going to play for us next?
I'm going to play Katit Sonjai from the artist Lamyong Gulab Simuang, which is this time is going to be the production from the south of Thailand.
That was great. It had sort of, you weren't quite sure where it was going to go. There were shades of also sort of, you know, Eartha Kitt sort of, you know, purring in it as well. It was quite something.
Well, I wasn't
something.
Quite sure what was being done to this one.
No, well, yeah, we can leave that for when we're off air. But we have to leave it there. Mafsai, we're going to see you later on this evening, I believe, at our event as well, which we're very much looking forward to. You were listening to the review here on Monocle 24. We're back in Bangkok in a moment. And you're back with a review with Tyler Brulé and Gwen Robinson here in Bangkok. And we are joined by, well, someone who's become not just the person of blamed, I would almost sort of say, and I say this in a very positive way, for bringing us here almost on a monthly basis now. But I was also going to say, it's quite fitting that Mr. Jay Spencer is also doing the magazine review, because Jay, I cannot pick up a Time magazine these days and not see you somewhere. You must have a very, very busy social schedule.
I'm not sure about that. Yes, I guess, I'm in a couple of things, I guess. Well, I've sort of fingers in a lot of pies, I guess.
Gwen, maybe we can put this in context a little bit, because there's a regional edition of Tatler here, but there are a number of magazines that sit front and center, which are very prominent, and it seems in Thailand not like many markets, but they do like a society and an opening party picture here, do they not?
Yeah, they do indeed. Any excuse for the party and the opening picture and the pomp and circumstance. Mm.
No, and it's curious also when you look at it, because there's that sort of section about, I would say, sort of, you know, the luxury side of the market, and of course where all of the watches and sort of the major property projects are. But there's also there's quite an upswell of, I think, you know, self-published magazines. I mean, a lot of like really, really interesting sort of talent. And Gwen, you were talking before about, you know, memories of Japan. I think in that same, you know, in that same way, we were talking to Supercorn from the Bangkok Post. He was saying, he was saying, you know, there's a new magazine coming out every month. But I would agree. It seems like actually there's more things coming out, you know, more frequently.
Sometimes it seems like a few times a month.
Yeah, well, if you go to the newsstands in Bangkok, you're overwhelmed with choice. I mean, literally, there is. I think pretty much covers every section, every demographic, be it high end, medium end, gossip.
Well, except English language. You know, that's the trouble. It's so frustrating as a Farang living here.
It is frustrating. And as I was saying, that a lot of it is, I have to hand carry some of them over. So they're harder to find editions. I mean, I have my particular tastes as well, what I like to read. And it's quite hard to find here. Mm. But I think the price point is also means it sometimes is quite difficult to purchase or make it economically viable for, you know, sort of big magazine people to cover all this, to cater for everyone's taste. Mm. But yes, you are overwhelmed.
Yeah, because the big selection, you see them, of course, in the malls, etc. But you don't see that many, let's say, kiosks on the street. I mean, there's not that.
No, it's
not the same way that if you're going around Seoul or if you're going around Taipei or something, that you have actually sort of everything sort of spread out for you. If you sort of want to have sort of, you know, the big sort of, you know, the buffet of titles, then you have to make your way to one of the major malls.
Yes. For myself, there's only two main players here, actually maybe three, Asia Books, Kinokuniya, and Bookazine. Mm. So those are where you would go and I would head to.
Now I'm wondering, you have a you don't have a, it's not the tallest stack of magazines there. It seems like you're a man of who favors weeklies, some may have even been lifted off an aircraft. I only say this because you just returned from London, but what gets you through a week or through the month?
Well, I have well, if you're talking about the local magazines so my regular fare would be something like Guru, which is published by the Bangkok Post.
Right.
And it keeps you up to date on what's going on, exhibitions, films, basic restaurant reviews. I mean, it's not a tough read. I mean, it's probably about 20 pages. Mm. Also, BK Magazine, it's the equivalent of a Time Out, but in a very basic format. But for foreign magazines, growing up in England, I got accustomed to The Economist, The Spectator, and actually I just saw this new issue of Spectator Lite, which I'm quite happy with. I really liked the design, the format, and also some of the articles in there as well.
I wanted to ask you, do you feel that, of course, Economist has global reach. The Spectator is maybe a little bit more specific in a way, but do you feel that is sort of the necessary lifeline as well? Because there's not sort of a Newsweekly equivalent here as well, in Thailand that gives you also that same type of read that The Economist does.
Certainly, we're served by two good English-speaking newspapers, they do carry quite a lot of international news, but I find that if you want to maybe get more info or get more in depth, then I find that I go for something like The Economist or Spectator or some of these magazines. Actually, my two favorite magazines are, apart from Monocle, is The Week, actually.
Right.
The Week in England, because it's a good read, easy read, small bite-sized chunks. And I don't want to be a bit of a geek, but Witch magazine.
Right.
Because
it's fine.
Where else can you go in the world and find a review of cameras or a review of baked beans and things like that? Things that, and I guess it makes me, I miss home in some ways, and it's my... but I can't get it here.
Right.
So.
Let me ask you, Jay. You go to the newsstand. Let's say if your peers, for example, would you say that when a Thai consumer or Bangkok consumer is looking at English language media, are their eyes drawn more to the US, or do you think they're drawn more to whether it's Aussie or even British media?
I guess the split is pretty equal, just judging by the fare, the titles that are there, because you can go and have two issues of sort of British or US, say Vogue, for example, or something like that, and I guess it's a matter of personal preference. I would say a lot of my friends are English, so they would probably go for the English titles more.
Gwen, I mentioned sort of Australia before because I was really surprised at Kinokuniya, for example, just the amount of Aussie titles. I mean, you see Australian Gourmet Traveller is there front and center. You see Belle magazine. Mm-hmm. You see Vogue Entertaining, or sort of Vogue Living is there as well. Is Australia sort of almost a third place of attraction as well? And Australia is definitely sort of trying to play a bigger role. I mean, you turn on the television, you see channel, it was actually the channel I was watching on TV the other night, you watch the Australian, let's say sort of regional satellite channel. Is it Channel Australia? Or it's because I'm quite original like that anyway. But I'm wondering, is there a certain sort of sense of aspiration? Because, Australia was very interesting probably, 15 years ago when you saw the rise of all these magazines. Australia was really exporting lifestyle. You saw, the rise of Australian architects, Australian chefs. So do you think that holds, any attraction in this market?
In this market, you mean that kind of style, or you mean
I'm actually talking the Australian sort of lifestyle, the chefs, having the fantastic sort of indoor outdoor living. I mean, all of those things were sort of defined in print over the last 15 years.
Well, even though I'm originally Australian, I did leave some years ago, and I drop in and out and maintain some connections. But it has struck me in recent years. Well, A, you've got a good point about Australia. The magazine market is incredible, considering that the newspaper market is so thin. And they do also love new magazines, just like the Times. There's too many magazines probably for the size of the population. But I just sense that they've become very upset. There's a lot that's sort of very internal and focused on Aussie food, Aussie chefs, particularly food and lifestyle things. And I think that's a great product they've exported abroad, and Aussie chefs are very popular, particularly in the region. So I think food is a strong point for Australia. I don't see a lot of art and design type magazines coming out.
Is sort of the Australian sort of dream a draw in Thailand, do you think? Ignore that Gwen is sitting here. She's half Japanese.
Oh, okay. No, well, I do see quite a lot of, as Gwen just said, Australian chefs working in Bangkok, and there is quite a lot of travellers, mainly backpacker types. But I don't see that there's a big draw, say, as in England or Europe or that kind of take on things. Maybe it's an issue of their promotion. How they promote themselves.
Yeah, partly I think it's the way they tend to focus on these specific areas.
Yes.
I was actually quite interested, Jay, in do you have favourite Thai language magazines, publications?
I have. I can't speak. I can speak, but I can't write or read Thai. So
right, so you're like me. I'm limited. Like to look at the pictures.
Pictures, yes. Yeah. But especially anything with small words, I like. But yeah.
But don't you find it engaging? I find them so visually intriguing.
Well, like if you look at the main daily newspaper, the best-selling one, Thai Rat.
Thai Rat.
It's quite morbid.
yes.
I mean, it's every day you have some gruesome picture one after another. But obviously it sells. I mean, that's the things
they will publish in papers here. Are you aware of that, Tyler?
No,
just extraordinary. Yeah, you're right.
Just in terms of the visuals and the
gore. Well, usually car accidents and murders,
right?
But they don't leave much to the imagination.
No, right. So you don't really need to read to.
You know exactly what happened.
If you're into that kind of thing, I agree. That's very funny.
Well, I think you're shattering the illusion. I thought everyone sort of thought it was a land of, as we said, a land of a thousand smiles, and nothing bad ever happened here.
Not in Thai Rat's world, I must say.
Jay Spencer, thank you very much for coming to chat to us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're listening to The Review here on Monocle 24. We're back in a moment.
In Tasmania, talented craftspeople are making use of the island's natural materials to design and build furniture and ceramics. Monocle video journalist Gabriel Lee toured the island to meet the designer makers, putting Tasmania's personality on the map.
It seemed to me that if I was going to make pots at this time and in this culture, I needed to say something about being here and now. And the way to do that was through the materials.
You can watch this and many more Monocle films, from affairs to business, culture to design, in the programs menu on monocle.com.
From São Paulo to Sapporo, from Brooklyn to Buenos Aires, with a samba, bossa, jazz, poppier, rock and roller, frankly far superior station, to discover the newest and finest sounds. This she makes me wanna dance. Is the sound of Monocle spinning its musical globe. Check in with our editors turned DJs as they whisk you through the time zones as we take you continental, Atlantic and Pacific. Round the clock, round the block, music on Monocle 24.
Get up, get that body. Welcome back to The Review here on Monocle 24, Tyler Brulé and Gwen Robinson. And we are joined by a very special guest. It's almost like we're picking up from last week. We're joined by Pulpa Savaprabha, who is a designer of two collections and is based in Bangkok. And I want to hit the streets right out after we get out of the studio to go and check things out. And also, you're going to have to tell me as well, because last week when we met, you had the most fantastic... I can only sort of say it's like a boy's summer play suit that you were wearing, which was fantastic. Another designer as well, by the name of?
Egg Tong Pathur.
Okay.
Yeah, he's doing accessories for Red Cup of Kubo, for Comte de Kazan.
Right. Anyway, so there's a lot of shopping to be done when we get out.
Well, yeah.
You were based in Europe for some time, a background, of course, working in New York, also in Italy for a group of designers. Mm-hmm. We've seen in the U.S. as well, I mean, a number of Thai names popping up. Even in London, I mean, there's no shortage of, you know, whenever I go and do speeches at schools, I mean, a lot of Thais.
Asian designers are emerging.
More than emerging. I think they're quite well established. I want to talk a little bit about the market here, though. The state of things, and why you decided that it was important to come back and set up your label here, and maybe what also Thailand offers versus, you know, what you might find if you went and hung out your shingle in New York.
Oh, you know what? I came back here by accident. By then was settled with my careers in New York and never wanted to move back to Bangkok, but there was family obligation and stuff like that. So I moved back and actually didn't start my line after 4 years after I moved back. I worked with my family business, but then I can't. I mean, I have worked with fashion for all my life, so after 4 years with family business, I got fed up. So I started to set up my own brand, my own line in Bangkok, which is 4 years ago. I started my own line in 2008. August, the 8th of August of 2008 was my first day of launching.
Right.
So that was about 4 years ago, roughly, yeah. Mm. And you know, when I first moved back here, I have to say the scenes are very, it's not what I expected to see, because I moved away for more than 12, 13 years. So I didn't expect to see fashion wars that happening. So I was, in a way, thinking that they're ready for something that is more international, you know, more of a fashion brand as a whole. Before that, it was, you know, a small shop and blah, blah, blah. There's a couple recognized big established brand, you know, only a few players, which mainly focus on teens.
Right.
I mean, when people think of the upper end of the market, they also think about, you know, good craftsmanship. They think about great tailoring. They think about, you can come to Bangkok and you can find good seamstresses or tailors who can make anything. Mm-hmm. Does that culture still exist? Would you say there's that high level is
it
there?
It exists, but the problem is if we want to make it systematic, it's become difficult.
You mean if you want to be able to produce 1,000 pairs of something?
Or a thousand pairs of good trousers or something like that. You know, it's become difficult because those people are, you know, they're into their own little world. They like to work with a few customers and, they are more like... garmental people, you know, they cannot. I cannot go and fuss around with the small seams and change the length of the design and stuff like that. They will not let me do it. So you know, it's hard. To find tunes between a designer and those people who have such a fantastic craftsmanship. Yeah, here in Bangkok.
Mm. Gwen, from your point of view, do you find yourself? And again, I haven't been here for half a year. That you can find everything that you need, or are you always sort of looking for that next expedition overseas for a shopping trip?
No, in fact, I'm actually a convert, and I only sort of stumbled across a certain Zen department store, for example, has made a thing of stocking.
And Zen is a local spin-off of one of the major stores, yeah.
Yes, in Central World, and it's... I think it's the kind of hip department store of
Thailand.
Yes,
it's for the youngsters.
Thailand, so,
and, yeah. In the
not center. Just youngsters.
It's downtown.
I'd say sort of wealthy people as well.
Wealthy, yeah, of course. Yeah. That's
it's made a thing of these young Thai designers. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I have to say, Tyler, is, and I don't know about your sizes, Pulpa, but I know that some of my girlfriends, Thai sizes... are not really for your average Western women.
Right.
I think
Well, that's, I think that's Asia in general, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is Asia in general, I suppose. But somehow the Thais are so petite and dainty.
It's hard because when you try to standardize your product, then you want to be international. So you want to have 2, 6, 8, 10. But then the local people are so tiny. So you have to adjust your pattern to accommodate them. So it's like, you know, it's back and forth between to please the local and to be able to grow internationally.
Well, if you
want
to take America by storm, I think you've got to go to 16, 18, 20, 22.
I bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Not that you want to go up to size 22, but where next in terms of the positioning of your brand? And I mean, obviously established in this market. But
well, definitely our international market. We are planning to show in Singapore this next collection. Well, we have a few talks with different showrooms in New York and in Tokyo as well. But right now we try to focus on the local market and try to make sure that our production here is tight and, you know, very effective.
Mm. Well, I look forward to a little shopping expedition as soon as we get out of the studio.
How about a big one?
Yeah, well, we could do a big one as well. Popana Savapraha, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And that is all for this Bangkok edition of The Review. Today's program was produced by Daniel Giacopelli and David Michon, and our studio manager was Jack Phillips here in Bangkok. We will be handing back over to the weekend edition next, where you could, of course, catch our pick of the week's best Monocle 24 stories, and, of course, the curator is also around as well this week. And don't forget to tune in to the Monocle Weekly, which will air on Sunday at midday London time. Before we get to that, though, this is something by the group Squeeze Animal. They're off the Spicy Disc imprint here in Thailand, and this is their song Better Day. For now, from all of us here in Bangkok, it's goodbye from me, Tyler Brulé.
And goodbye from me, Gwen Robertson.
Have a good weekend. Goodbye.